Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Joe's Weather World, your only weather podcast dedicated to Kansas City. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Joe's Weather World. I'm Fox 4 meteorologist Joe Loria, and today we are going to talk about a story or a situation or a scenario that is going to become increasingly an issue as we head towards the late spring and summertime months here in the Kansas City area, and that is in particular air quality. And we talk about this quite often during the newscast when there is bad air quality and good air quality and skycast and ozone and all this other stuff related to the air that we breathe here in Kansas City. And to help us out with that, we've got a couple of guests here that are going to talk a little bit more fluently, if you will, about air quality and stuff like that. We're going to bring in the folks from MARC, the Mid-America Regional Council. And with us for today are two people, one by the name of Karen Clausen. Karen, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having us.
And Doug is joining her, Doug Norsby. And Doug, what is your official title?
I'm an air quality planner.
An air quality planner. What does an air quality planner do?
We do a number of different things. I'm involved heavily with education and outreach of our program, trying to share information about how ozone is created and ways that people can improve the air quality by changing their behaviors a little bit. We also put out messages. Some of them are on your station, but we have different spots that we put on television and radio. You might see some bus ads, just reminding people to take care of our air and do some of those things that we like them to do for air quality.
Okay, Karen, your role within MARC and air quality and this whole thing is what?
Wow, well, I am the air quality program manager.
Okay.
So, kind of like Doug, you know, we're working to monitor and improve air quality throughout the region. And we do a lot of different things at MARC, but I think this is one of our most important things that we do because it really does impact public health. Personally, I do a lot of tracking of, you know, federal legislation and rulemaking and things going on at the state level. And we work really hard across our region, which is quite a big region, which is 9 counties, 119 cities, 2 states to, you know, bring different stakeholders together to discuss this issue and figure out what the best policies are moving forward.
And is that in general, so we should probably start with a broad stroke here. Is that in general the role of MARC, or what is the role of MARC?
Well, when we characterize what MARC is, you know, officially we're a council of governments, but we are kind of an association of city and county governments. So we have membership. Cities and counties are members of MARC, and we have a board of directors, and we come together and we discuss and plan policy around a variety of different issues. So not just environmental issues like air quality, but we tackle transportation, early learning and Head Start, older adult services. We coordinate all the 911 systems across the region. We handle emergency services, and a variety of community development initiatives are under our belt too. So we do a lot in the region.
A lot in the region that many people may not realize or is under the umbrella, if you will, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and spin this around to the air quality situation, and in particular, answering the question right off the bat: how overall, and we'll have Doug you answer this one, I guess. How overall do you think our air quality is here in Kansas City, perhaps compared to other cities of roughly the same size?
Overall, we're doing pretty good. There, we are on the borderline.
And this is what I've heard for many, many years.
We have tiptoed a long time.
Right?
Yeah, we've tiptoed on it for a long time. The standard for air quality health set by the EPA has been changed a few times, and so it's been lowered, making it a little more challenging to hit. As far as cities of our size, we do a fair job, but we have a lot of air pollution isn't just developed in situ. So we've got stuff that's coming from down south in Oklahoma, the refinery process down Texas. That it all comes up our way, and then we have local production. So there's the cars and stuff from commuting. There's industrial stuff. There's electrical generation units and that kind of thing.
And Kansas City, being a city that loves its commuting and is so spread out and there are so many roads, how much does the car aspect of this play into things?
More than half of the emissions that are generated contributing to ozone come from transportation.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a big one.
And in an idealized world, Karen, I'm assuming that if we had this fabulous mass transit situation with trains and all this stuff all over the place to get people from point A to point B, maybe we would be in better shape. But that's not really the case, is it?
Right. I mean, an expanded transportation system, including transit, would, and other forms of transportation, frankly, that have lower emissions would be great for the Kansas City region. And so in other parts of MARC, we're working on that issue. So.
And how is that process coming along? I mean, I would imagine, especially now in this day and age where so much land is being taken up by houses or businesses or rights of way and stuff like that, it's not as if you could just say, you know what, we need to put a train down down I-35 to link into Johnson. It can't be that simple, is it?
Right. I mean, so how we use our land in the Kansas City region is very much tied to transportation. And so you can't address transportation without looking at land use policy. And, how's it going in the Kansas City region? You know, I think we're making pretty good, solid incremental steps towards, making it easier for people to get around, allowing for new modes of transportation so that people have options about how they commute. So if they wanted to take a form of transportation that is better for the environment, they could. We're working on that. And we have a great set of transit agencies in the region who are working really, really hard to provide excellent solutions for Kansas Cityans. So we're moving in the right direction, I think.
And as you look forward to where we may be going and with us butting up against these requirements that are set by the EPA that you were referring to earlier, and I've heard about this off and on now for quite a few years. Let's kind of dive into my immediate connection with you guys, and that would be the SkyCast program. And the value of that, not only to our viewers, but to Kansas City as a whole. Perhaps, Doug, you want to explain simply what the SkyCast program is.
Absolutely. The SkyCast is the forecast for incoming ozone pollution in the area. So we have contracted with some external meteorologists who just focus specifically on that pollution development. So they're looking at what they expect to come in from outside the region, as well as what they expect to be contributed based on meteorological conditions here in the Kansas City area. Ozone is the criteria pollutant that the EPA has designated as far as a concern to the Kansas City area. There's also particulate matter, which has come a little bit more. We've seen a little bit more of that this April as some of the Flint Hills burning goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But
yesterday, last night, as a matter of fact, case in point, when the sun was setting, even talked about this on the news, it just disappeared in the horizon, not because it went below the horizon, but because it went behind a huge veil of smoke. And when I looked at the satellite pictures, sure enough, you could see the smoke coming up from Oklahoma and the Flint Hills, as well as other parts of eastern Kansas. You see all those prescribed burns, mm-hmm. that smoke
yes.
coming right up into Kansas City.
Right.
Yes. And there are some efforts underway to try to kind of control the impact of that smoke. The Kansas Department of Health and Environment has a website called KS Fire, KSFire.org. and that gives the burning conditions that can be expected in all the different counties, and it color codes whether or not it would be preferable to try to burn during those periods, or if that smoke might impact downstream towns. So they're working with the ranching community to try to minimize the impact of that smoke, but it does sometimes come our way, and so we'll see a little trail of that. Yeah. Fortunately, when we're looking at forecasts and we're looking at identifying the quality of a day, we're averaging over a number of hours, and so if you have a little plume that comes through, it'll average out, and it'll be okay as far as the forecast on that day or the way that it kind of appears in more of a chronic way.
I would think the vast majority of our listeners hear the word ozone. They think to themselves, oh, wait, I don't understand. Ozone is good. It's good, but it's good when it's way up in the upper reaches of the atmosphere. It's not good when it's down here on the ground. Can you explain maybe why it's not so good when it's down here at the ground? And what causes ozone to build up here on the ground?
Yeah, ozone on the ground, and it's referred to as ground-level ozone, is an oxidizer. So when a person breathes it in, it actually kind of attacks the lung tissue, and it's like having a sunburn kind of inside your lungs. So
Not good.
It's created by precursors. A lot of pollutants are directly emitted. So there's just kind of a one-step process. You burn something and particulate goes up, for example. With ozone, it's a combination of a couple different things that interact over time. So you have a NOx component, which is created by combustion. So burning fuels, whether it's in a car or electrical generation or the fires that are going on. And then you have VOCs, volatile organic compounds, which are if you want to think of when you fill up your gas tank, the ripple of waves that kind of come out of that. You see it with solvents, paint thinner, acetone for your fingernail removal, fingernail polish removal, and that kind of thing. So that evaporative component mixes with the NOx in sunlight, and it starts to interact, and ozone is created. Particularly when it's hot, so you have more evaporation. When it's dry, so that there's no interaction with water molecules that are kind of present in the air. And when it's real still, so the wind will kind of blow that stuff around, but when it's still, it has a chance to just kind of sit there and bake. And that's when we see some ozone spikes.
But I notice sometimes as we get into those rougher days when their air may be bordering on unhealthy, or you have an orange alert, which is, I guess, the reference, right? Orange alerts are a trigger for what, Karen?
Well, so orange alerts we don't see too many of
right.
them.
Right, so they'll be 1 to 5?
Maybe, maybe something like that. I think last year, how many did we have on
the
orange?
I think we had 12.
Did we?
Yeah, sometimes it can get up around a dozen is kind of what we would sometimes expect as normal, which is not good. But we've had a number of years where we've had really good seasons, where we had one season where there were 4. I think one season we had 2.
See, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I want to circle back to that. But so let's go as a – what? So when an orange alert is triggered,
what do you do?
What do
right?
you do?
Right, yeah. So when an orange alert is triggered, we're advising people to limit their outdoor exposure, particularly unusually sensitive groups of people. So
and do these people know that they're sensitive to this particular situation?
Not necessarily.
See, that's a trick, right?
I mean, you may be a child. You have no idea what's going on. So it's, when we do our public education and outreach, we try to hit a broad audience so that we're making sure older adults are getting the information and the parents of young children are getting information. But we're asking people to limit certain activities that they're doing, whether it's not topping off your gas at the gas station, refueling after the sun goes down, preferably, limiting any sort of lawn and garden tools that you might be operating, that type of thing. But when you start getting into ozone alerts that are orange, we do ask people to kind of limit their outdoor exposure in general.
because it can be harmful.
Right, it can be harmful. And, you know, it's not just unusually sensitive groups, but it can then start really impacting the everyday person who doesn't have.
And there's orange, and then there's next level, mm-hmm. right? And those next level, was it purple, I think?
Red.
Red, okay. Mm-hmm. Those next level scenarios are pretty rare.
We've had a few. They are rare. We want them to be rare. Right. But we had a few last season.
We sometimes have hours that
where we teeter over.
Where we'll have red hours. That once they average out, the day is an orange. The last forecasted red day was in 2007. So the last forecasted day has been a while. Last year, we had a forecasted orange alert day. And it did come back a red. So we did have one day last year, and it's the first time that's happened since 2007.
And is the city allowed, for lack of a better phrase, is this area allowed a certain amount of that, or at some point is that not good in terms of planning and stuff like that?
It's not good.
Yeah.
The way that the EPA evaluates how well you're performing is they look at the fourth highest reading off of a monitor from within a region. Only one monitor needs to trip. And so at any individual monitor, you pull that fourth reading, and then you average that over that year and the previous 2 years. So there's a three-year average. And that number has to be at the standard that the EPA has set. So, when we were talking a little bit earlier about the number of ozone alert days, those earlier years, the last couple of years, when we've had really good ozone seasons, we get to use some of that to offset where we're at now. Now, if we don't, as a region, if we don't take care of things, and we continue to have a lot of production, we're going to have multiple years that contain a fair number of orange ozone alerts. And when that happens, then we're in trouble.
Okay, so circle back to the weather aspect of this. Mm-hmm. And my guess would be that you folks would probably be a fan of wind, right? Because that would, in general,
yes,
knock down levels as an average. Mm-hmm. What I find sometimes interesting is that people who live north of Kansas, with our prevailing winds typically southwest to northeast or south to north, for those who live north of Kansas City, they may think, oh, well, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. It doesn't affect us whatsoever. Well, there's an issue there, right? Because what we're generating here has got to go somewhere.
That's right.
And if the prevailing wind is southwest to northeast, what I've noticed over the years when looking at some of the your information is that you could see how that pollution, well, it may start in Wyandotte County or something like that, but it's going somewhere, and let's just say it's going up I-35.
That's very correct. I mean, that's the way it kind of goes. We have, because there are the two precursors, there's the two components, there are different limiting factors for how that ozone is going to combine. So early on, it may be that there isn't enough VOC to maximize everything. And then you come across the downtown area, and now you have a kind of a plume of VOC. And now all that previous NOx that hasn't reacted can start reacting. So it is something that occurs over distance and time. And as you said, a lot of this starts to develop and form during the middle of the day or late afternoon, where it's really starting to kind of bake and it's still, and then finally, you know, everybody kind of takes a little bit of a breath at the end of a hot summer day as we have a little bit of a light wind, a light variable wind that starts to push things. Well, it's that southwest wind, and so the pollution that's generated does move up toward the southwest or the southeast.
So if you live up in Liberty or Kearney,
yes,
or St. Joe or other places up north of Kansas City especially, this is an issue for them as well as us here, I guess would be the best way of saying it. All right, so an orange alert is issued. And we'll talk about it on the news. All the TV stations are very typically proactive with this stuff. From a organizational standpoint, Karen, what do you want people to do? Orange alert, here's what we would love for you to do.
Right. Well, you know, everyday people can take everyday actions to help us reduce our ozone precursor emissions. You know, try to do, you know, be more efficient with how you travel. So one of the things that you can do that might be easy is to, you know, try something called trip chaining. So instead of driving back and forth all over the region to run your errands, maybe you can plan, you know, all your errands to be sort of in one location or locations that are in close proximity to each other. So you're not putting more basic miles on your car than you need to. That's one thing you can do. Walking and biking instead of driving is I think, really helpful. If you're big into gardening and things like that, this is not necessarily something that's going to impact on an ozone alert day, but over time, how you garden and the type of tools that you use and the type of plants that you use, like more native landscaping, for instance, or planting more trees can be helpful over time. Doug, what else am I forgetting here? We've got...
Well, I think you're doing a great job. I guess... one thing to think about, too, is not just what you should do, but what you should put off doing.
Yes.
And so, as Karen mentioned, with fueling your tank after 7 o'clock or postponing it till a day when it's going to be a yellow day or a green day, wait to mow the lawn so you're not using a two-stroke engine in a, you know, at the time when that's going to produce more emissions.
Circling back to that, by the way, we're talking to Karen and Doug from the Mid-America Regional Council, and we're talking about SkyCast and ozone and pollution here in Kansas City. Do lawnmowers, are they any worse than a car in terms of their efficiency and what they're, for lack of a better phrase, belching out as pollutants? Lawnmowers are very small, but by the same token, Do they contribute a lot more than what people may think?
They do. They do. And there has been some work done, again, EPA regulation, improving the emissions of small engines. But they still are a larger contributor for their size. And it has to do with the type of engine that they are. Just a two-stroke engine has an open crankcase, and so it produces more emissions than you would have with, a car that has a catalytic converter. The other thing is that a lot of that equipment, instead of running straight on fuel and then the oil is separate, you'll have an oil-fuel mix that you will burn. It can be chainsaws. It can be, hedge trimmers might have that kind of a motor on it. So, yes, even though they're small and even though it might seem like you don't operate them for very long, pound for pound, they're pretty
they
heavy
do.
Polluters.
Yeah. So Karen and I were talking earlier before we started this podcast, and sometimes I question, and my mind can be somewhat cynical sometimes, about, we talk about these orange sky casts, and we talk about trying to get folks to alter their lives in some way, maybe getting it out of the routine just a little bit. How do you feel that overall the program has gone? Do you feel like it's having an impact? Do you feel like it's helping, maybe? Are people responding to this type of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is something that really, you know, marks the success or the failure
right.
of our program. So
right.
we look very carefully at this. Every year we do a public education awareness survey to really understand people's understanding about ozone as an issue, where they get their information from, are they aware of the different things that they can do, and are they actually doing these things? So this behavior change aspect is really important to us, and I think over time we've seen a greater understanding of the issue and a greater understanding of what people can do. There's a lot of willingness, I think, to do things like not topping off your car and avoiding filling your car with gas on, you know, in the middle of a hot day, and maybe postponing that a little bit. But some of the bigger asks that we would like people to think about, like changing their mode of transportation, is a little more difficult. And there's a lot of variables at play with that, of course. You know, some being, you know, the economy or the availability of different transportation in different areas of the region. But we think people are moving in the right direction. And I think particularly right now, as, you know, the conversation around climate change is more elevated than it has ever been, people are really starting to think about, you know, it's air quality is really important for public health, but there's all these other benefits to it as well. Climate stability is really important. People are thinking about, the money saving, part of it. And so we are seeing a little bit of movement, but we still have a lot of work to do.
So what happens, and we'll probably have to wrap this up here in a couple of minutes, what happens if we do get in trouble with the EPA? What happened? And what can the EPA, what can happen?
A lot. If we do violate the current standards for ozone that EPA sets, it does trigger this whole long process of things that that the states and Mid-America Regional Council have to engage in. So the states would be responsible for putting together a state implementation plan to help us get back into attainment or compliance with that EPA standard. And there's a timeline attached to it. It's usually 3 years or more that we have to get back to better air quality shape, if you will. And then it also triggers some things that we have to do on the transportation side of things at MARC. So we have to make sure that all of the transportation plans that we have in the region fall within allowable sort of air quality budgets, if you will. We're putting in place projects that help reduce our ozone precursor emissions. So it's very serious. We do not want to get to this point. And so this is why we work really hard at providing information to people across the region of all different ages, and helping people learn about what's going on.
And Doug, just how close are we to teetering into trouble?
We have a monitor right now that at the end of the season last year was right at the level before it would trip over. So 71 parts per billion would be a violation, and we have one monitor that was at 70.
Okay.
So we're close.
So if, for example, this spring, summer, whatever, we have enough wind or we have whatever occur and we don't lean up into that 70 to 71 parts per billion, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay. Then obviously that's a good thing. And does that help us out to knock down the average for next year in case something
Yes. happens? Yes, it does. And a lot of what we see is meteorologically driven.
Right.
So we'll have droughts. Drought periods tend to have worse seasons for ozone.
Interesting.
Yes. So
despite the fact that last year was wet up until about May or through late April, then it seemed like the spigot got turned off and then we teetered right into drought by July. Something even that short term, May, June, July, where things just shut off, can be a player in ozone production, right?
They can. And we're looking at the fourth highest ozone day on a monitor. So when we get into a period of drought where those conditions are really favorable for ozone development, it's that much more important that we try to do what we can as a region to keep our contributions down, because there's going to be conditions that are just ripe for bringing stuff in that we'll end up adding to.
See, I love that. I just learned something. I didn't realize how much drought plays a role. So, all right, so now I'm going to geek out on you. Why is that? Why does drought, is it because we're losing the greenery?
There's a couple things. So when you have, wetter conditions, you have more
clouds.
Right, more clouds so that the sunlight can't come down and start cooking things. You also have more turbulence, so there's just more vertical mixing. And you also have fewer evaporative emissions, so that VOC component is less predominant. So all of those wildfires make a big difference. When you get a wildfire going, that's another producer of NOx, which is the other precursor. So some of those wildfires that we had, whether California, and we had some up in the Northwest, some of that was actually coming down. And
right, because I remember we were showing these maps on TV with these smoke, and you could tell in the sky and the sunsets and stuff like that. So even something that could be what appears to be up in the atmosphere, it plays a role in what's happening down here on the ground as well?
It can. Again, it has to do with some of the mixing over time and in place. Now, since you're geeking out, I'll go ahead and geek out a little with you.
I love geeking out. That's part of Joe's weather world. You get to geek out as much as you want.
There was some work that the EPA was doing on a across geographic boundaries, transportation of ozone. And so they were looking at where source ozone came from and how far downstream it would go in whether it would affect a downstream community's actual ozone results. And there was a study that they'd done at that time that showed ozone pollution produced here in Kansas City was actually affecting a reading of a town in Michigan. So
really?
Yes. So
they must be thrilled with us.
Yes. Yeah. So there's been quite a bit of work. And ozone in particular is kind of unusual in that a lot of the other pollutants tend not to spread as much. And ozone is really this regional pollutant.
So as we wrap this up then, would it be fair to say that what happens in Oklahoma City and Dallas and maybe Little Rock to a certain extent affects us? If we're affecting Michigan, wouldn't it go to reason that Dallas and Austin and Oklahoma City and Tulsa could affect us?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll have the stuff that's coming from kind of out of state, and we'll also have meteorological conditions that we can't really control that much, but we're still responsible for keeping the ozone level down in our area. And so those behaviors that Karen was talking about are that much more important. And when we were doing our survey, we actually looked at two different questions, things that people are doing because of an ozone alert day and things that they're doing just because they feel like it's the right thing to do. And there are people who respond to ozone alert days, but taking that and making that a natural routine behavior
It's
a challenge, but once it's there, it's a learned behavior. And even if on a particular day you didn't know that it was an orange day, you'll be doing those behaviors anyway. So it's a challenge, but I think our region is up for it.
All right. Karen, Doug, thank you so much for coming on by today, being part of Joe's Weather World as we visited with the folks from MARC about orange skycasts and skycasts in general. Thank you. I learned something. The drought thing I had no idea about. And we wish good air quality upon all of us. I think here in Kansas City it'll be another challenging year, I'm sure. I guess that's just the way it goes. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again so much. And thank you so much for listening to Joe's Weather World. We always have fun with these podcasts, and we'll have another one coming up in just about another week or 10 days. Thanks so much.